announcing the What is RevOps Handbook, the only guide you will need to learn how to accelerate your sales cycle, improve win rates, and create a predictable revenue model. Learn how to establish a revenue operations team, grow a revenue machine, and how to measure success, all within the What is RevOps Handbook. Head to evster.com/what-is-revops or click the link in the description below to grab your copy today. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales ops onto the show to deconstruct the what, why, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by EBSA, a revenue intelligence platform used to identify risk in the pipeline and score customer engagement, and is sponsored by the Global Sales Operations Association and the UK Revenue Operations Network. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. And today I really mean that, because for the first time, perhaps the second time in the history of the podcast, we are joined by multiple guests, not just any guests, but two guests that have both been on the show previously and are now pseudo or partners of the show. So first, let's welcome Kirsty, who has just been promoted to VP, is it Rev or Sales Ops, Kirsty?
Revenue operations, yeah.
VP of Revenue Ops at Signal. Is it Signal or Signal AI?
It's now Signal AI. Yeah, well spotted. We've also rebranded the company.
Okay. So first of all, congrats on the promotion.
Thank you.
Kirsty was guest number 3.
Yeah,
something like
days.
That. Yeah. Very early days. And then we are also joined by Mr. Kevin Rabin, who is the president, founder and president of SOPSA, which is Sales Ops something. Kevin, you're going to have to help me out here.
It's the Global Sales Ops Association.
Yes, of course. Kevin was guest number 38. So Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Well, hey, thanks. It's great to be here. And Kirsty, I didn't know about the promotion. Congratulations. Well deserved.
Thank you very much.
And so what we're going to be doing in this discussion is focusing deep into a topic which is probably running through the minds of most sales/robots people right now, which is, of course, the forecast for 2021. And so I'm going to kick off the show by asking a question to both guests. How have the last 9 months impacted sales forecasting?
Should I go first, Kat?
Absolutely. Ladies always go first.
Excellent. Well, I guess the obvious thing to say is that it made it a lot harder at first. I think the first 2 months especially were just incredibly difficult, because it was, I joke around the word unprecedented. I think all of us are hoping for some precedented times to come back, but it was entirely, you know, none of us had been through it before. We didn't know where it was going to go. We didn't know what to expect. So of course, forecasting became incredibly difficult, and also cash flow. You know, some clients that quickly were kind of shutting it, battening down the doors, and that became an issue, especially for, you know, smaller companies. And it was a real challenge. So I think it became more important as a RevOps manager perspective to keep the pipeline up to date, because we weren't in the office and we couldn't communicate. Communication also became harder. You didn't have that constant dialogue with your colleagues being around you. And I speak from experience. I think we all know that often when you look at a pipeline, understanding what the nuances of each deal is or are can differ across sales reps. So obviously we've done many efforts in the past to kind of prevent that happening, but I think it may became even more important so that whoever was looking at the pipeline could look at the key metrics and make an assessment based off that. So the accuracy of the pipeline and the consistency of the pipeline across all of the teams, from renewals and upsells to new business, became incredibly important.
And over to you, Kevin. Obviously, I assume that you are speaking or you interface with many SalesOps people. What are you hearing are the challenges as per what have been presented to us because of the last 9 months?
Yeah, you know, with all of our members, we get different, multiple variant types of forecasting, but it really boils down to three types of forecasting that we all rely on. I kind of refer to it as that hurricane chart. If you're in Florida and you've got a hurricane coming at you from the Atlantic Ocean, you've got multiple models that try to figure out where that thing's going to land. And in sales, we usually have three. We have historical forecasting. We have that manual roll-up forecast. And then we have that, if you're currently using new tools, regression analysis or AI-based forecasting. And honestly, with those three different forecast types, they had been working pretty well because you were able to get a clear indication of kind of what your max and min probability was and get a sense of direction and speed. But now with the crisis that we've been hit with, our historical forecasting has gone out the window. So it's not nearly as useful as it used to be. And because regression analysis relies so much on that historical forecasting and all the different variables in that, that's also having to readjust. And it's going to take a time for our AI-based forecast to readjust. So what that means is this whole function of the manual forecast that we do within our sales teams is getting extreme focus. And it's those companies that had a bit of a dysfunction maybe in that roll-up process that are suffering because now there's more intense focus put on the manual forecast. Now, the good thing about it is when you do the manual forecast, it's even less about the outcome. The real benefit of doing a manual forecast is literally the process you go through and being real with yourself as a rep, getting the sales managers to be able to coach and to work through, you know, territory management and opportunity management with their reps. And so this last 9 months has, for the healthy companies, it has allowed them to focus more on that time that they spend in that manual forecast and get real about where their deals are, what are the real next steps, what do they really need to, you know, cut bait on and move away from, where are those potentials, usually within existing accounts for upsell, because that's usually the easiest place to go. So I see a lot of customers and a lot of our members that are looking at how do we expand in our existing accounts even more, because the net new business is harder to come by. So I think that the big impact has been on getting real with that manual roll-up of your forecast.
Very clear breakdown. Thank you, Kevin. So more emphasis is on this manual forecast. And at the same time, we're also looking more at forecasting renewals versus new business. Going forward into 2021 then, Kirsty, what are you guys doing to try and improve the accuracy of that manual forecast?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, again, underpinning the forecast and the metrics that we use for the forecast stay the same. But I think one thing that we need to learn and that we'll be doing differently is being a bit more agile in terms of how we approach that. Certainly communication across the teams as well. So right, the way we used to have a fairly siloed approach, really, I guess. We would have a forecasting, you know, done in the FP&A team and it would use the data in the CRM and the tools that we use without necessarily involving the wider team. And I think one thing that we do now is across the customer service team, the sales team and the finance team, we work really closely together. So we all have a very clear view of new and renewing business and invoicing and collections as well.
So focusing on improving the communication between those teams, does this mean like a 15-minute daily Zoom stand-up? Or does this mean you all share like docs and you work through stuff together? Maybe that's a very basic question.
No, it's good. We actually, when we all started working from home to improve the communication, exactly like what Kevin just said, you know, there's increased focus on revenue retention as well as net revenue retention, quarterly revenue retention, and then the new business on top of that and the upsell. So we started to have a weekly meeting with all the relevant stakeholders in it for each metric So we went from, you know, having management meetings and various, I guess, kind of, you know, other siloed meetings, to we now have a weekly revenue retention meeting. We already had pipeline meetings. Obviously, you know, often the most focus is on the upcoming deals. We have an upsell meeting, and we also have a big deal meeting. So we took each SaaS metric that was really important and was affecting the forecast, and we suddenly had, you know, like every business, concerns about. And we have a weekly meeting and work stream for those metrics and actions as to how we can maintain them or improve them or, you know exactly what's happening with them.
Makes sense. And I like the idea of breaking down those meetings to specific metrics. So there'll be one meeting just focused on this specific SaaS metric. That seems like those meetings, well, you're probably making more progress in the meeting. This seems a bit more digestible, is the word that I think I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think one thing that really worked for us, so in those meetings we have marketing, I mean, it varies slightly, obviously, depending on the metric, but we have sales enablement or commercial enablement, as they're called in my team, because they work across CS and all the sales rep levels. We have the marketing team, we have leadership, we have FP&A, obviously me and the various sales manager or CS managers in there. So it keeps us really honest with the actions. And it's really good from right at the very beginning. It was all about like working. There was some blind spots that we had, you know, we're a startup, scale up stage company. So we definitely don't have all the answers. And to be honest, there were areas that we suddenly realized we were really blind in. We didn't measure the metrics potentially as closely as we should be. So initially we were working out where we were with those metrics, what was happening, which way were we trending. And then it was all about, as a collective, working together across all the different functions as to how we could, you know, address or you know, if it was okay for now, how do we keep it that way? And then now it became, what are the actions? And then it was like, you know, teamwork in between the meetings. But knowing that there's always that weekly meeting, I think we've probably most listeners will be familiar with, if you've got that meeting each week and that cadence of having to give an update you know, say where you are with your actions, especially if your name's against it, then it really does drive that the actions to probably happen a bit quicker than they would otherwise.
The accountability.
Yes, exactly. Now,
Kevin, going back to your point about the three types of forecasting, do you think then that, let's say in 3 years, touch wood, another virus happens, then these other two, the AI and the other one you mentioned, forecasting strategies are not going to be effective again. And so does that mean that actually we should just be spending our time on this manual forecasting strategy? Because the other two are only reliable if the last 3 years of data don't have anomalies in.
Well, I think you still have to have those for a sense. There's seasonality to a lot of companies, you know, so there's going to be seasonality that you're still going to see that's going to change. I think what it's going to do is it's going to force us to get more granular in those historical and those AI forecasts around different customer segments and how they perform differently, and maybe even different geographies. We all know companies that, you know, they're few and far between that have really benefited from this time. Right. And so those customer segments thrown in with those in maybe hospitality or travel, if you're looking at that as an average, you're going to have a serious problem. So what it's going to force us to do is get more granular about segmenting our customers and how they perform in various different types of disruptions. And hopefully what this will do is it'll, you know, there's disruption all the time if you look at it at that level, whether it's an energy company and the price of oil and gas is going up and down, or whether it's a, you know, the pharma companies and different regulations that happen. You know, maybe what this will do is it'll actually force us to get more granular and stop treating our customers as though they're one specific kind of persona and get more granular about it. And if we get to that point and we learn from that, then we're going to be able to come out of this with better forecasting models, regardless of what happens in any major market or micro market.
It just sparked something that Kevin said. So we've just started, kicked off our Q1 2021 planning and forecasting today, actually. And one of the things that we're doing is, you know, obviously one of the key metrics you'd look at historically was conversion rate. And that's something that we have always monitored and tracked. It wasn't one of our blind spots, you'd be glad to know. But now instead of just looking at it, you know, maybe year to date or previous 12 months or, you know, because it never really fluctuated that much. Instead, we are looking at it much more granularly. So it's quite a tactical thing. We're now looking at it in terms of volume and value. Previously, we always looked at it in terms of value. with having a mind on the volume, obviously, but we didn't necessarily use that as part of our approach. And then also, instead of, we're looking at like a trailing 3 months, a trailing 6 months, seeing how that's trending and the different stories that it tells. And then also looking at it in different timeframes, like year to date and year on year. And we are looking at that historical data to see how it's changed. And then we're using all of those numbers instead of just picking one, you know, we're not just whichever one we think is more accurate, because they're all looking at the same data set and just telling it in a different way. So we're taking a mix of all of those to work out what conversion rate should we be looking at and using, at maybe, you know, conversion rates, multiple ones, in our forecast for next year.
So if I was to ask the question, how can we create a sales forecast that is crisis proof? Is the answer to that question segmentation?
I feel that I'm proof or resistant. I think resistant or agile is, that's where you have to get. You have to get down to that point. And I think one of the things we need to be looking at too is our definition of things like productivity. You know, oftentimes we're looking at the we're making a big push to reduce cycle times regardless of the type of a sales cycle we're in. And, you know, activity times quality equals productivity, right? That's kind of the calculation. But when you divide all that by time, that's when you realize that, you know, in the time like we're going through right now, the time that we spent is getting extended, or in some cases getting radically reduced, as people maybe, if you're selling a digital enablement product, right? So segmentation and micro segmentation is important. And then also understanding where the real value added activities are for our sales team to direct their actions, right? There may be certain things that we cannot do, and our cycle times are going to get extended, and it's unnatural to try to press a rep or a customer to do something in an unnatural time when something like this occurs, right? So we have to get really real about what are the value added steps that a rep can take. Where do they need to spend their time? And, you know, we do as much as we can in certain segments, knowing that the time's going to get extended. And then we accelerate our investment of activities in other segments because those are on a fast track, right? So I think it's a kind of a combination of those things.
Got it. And Kirsty, you were saying that you guys have, starting the forecast today, have already started to adopt additional segmentation to help with 2021.
Yeah. But just to be clear, we're not going to use the segmentation approach to like look at different areas of our business and apply different. I think we're still going with a more broad approach, because I think once you get when you're trying to do a forecast for a year or a quarter, I think when you try and get far too detailed and far too granular, I think you can actually then lose some of the power of kind of the broader strokes that you can take. So I think I totally agree that actually the ability to predict the change in things like sales cycle or value or conversion rate or the size of your pipeline at each stage is so valuable as it can be, that predictor for the performance. So the question becomes more clearly about being able to predict the change, whether that's going to be positive or negative, and then move towards processes that can increase positives or lessen the negatives, and so hit the forecast that way.
Makes sense. Do we think anything has irreversibly changed within revenue operations over the past 9 months? I'm sending that over to Kevin.
Well, I have a hope. I hope that one of the things that's irreversibly changed is that it's started to break down some silos. So often as we get to running different departments or different functions, you know, build those siloed walls. And what we don't realize is that day one mentality of a small company that where every function has to work together tightly to make things happen is really where we need to be operating, no matter how big or how old our company is. So, you know, in times like this, it forces us to work closer together across functions, work on a more common set of metrics and dashboards, and work in a cadence that's more connected. I hope that has changed for the better, and in that's an irrevocable change. That's one of my hopes.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree. I entirely agree that the increased communication and the alignment, you know, the meetings that we have around each metric, I'm quite confident that they'll be here to stay. And that's something that that we all see the benefit of across all of our functions. And I also think that the alignment between sales and marketing, and the fact that we're all working from home, it really refocuses the importance of that alignment between marketing and sales and the marketing operations part of RevOps. I think it's more important than ever that we're driving leads to the sales team and capturing the right information for them to be able to sell to those leads. But also reps, I think, I'm sure everyone in the UK, you know, we find it very hard now to get direct dials because of various, you know, inhibitors. So enabling rep social selling on LinkedIn, for example, is really key in ensuring that you are where your buyers are, and increasing that's virtual. You know, it's harder to be, you're not there in events, you can't be networking as much anymore, and you can't necessarily get people on direct dials as much anymore or as easily as before. You know, you can't even ring the switchboard and get through to people that way if people aren't in the office. Social selling and working with marketing for content and things like that is only increasing and driving that closer alignment.
Yeah, Kirsty, I agree with that. And I think one of the other things here is I hope that the rapid improvement in digitization that we've had, because what I've seen is a big increase in these digital selling products and digital selling tools and techniques that we would have, you know, taken years to internally sell before. This crisis has thrown us into a place where people aren't asking questions. They're just funding those things. And, you know, my hope is that, you know, we can prove that these types of tools and these types of approaches are really game changers. And that the next time we go to start asking for investment in things that we can define and that we have a hunch or that we have some quantified value on, that we won't get as much pushback, that the digital transformation that has started moving so quickly will continue. That is a hope for me.
So the virus pushed forward many trends that were already happening: remote work, e-commerce. Are we saying then that the virus has also pushed forward the trend we're seeing from sales ops to revenue ops?
Good question. I'll let Kirsty answer, but for me, the way I see it, RevOps is a function that has become more and more important in a certain size company at a certain level in their maturity. For the really large companies, RevOps is difficult, an even more difficult thing to pull off because of those ingrained silos across marketing and customer success and sales ops. So, but you know, within a medium size or fast growth company, you know, the only person who can speak to that would be Kirsty. What do you think? Is it happening?
Yeah, definitely. And that was skipping ahead to my prediction. I think if it hasn't happened or isn't happening now, I think it's going to happen. It's definitely the move to revenue operations is going to gather pace. I think the crisis has underlined the importance of the role and the reliance of looking at a large number of data points instead of just being, you know, siloed on the new business side of things. Certainly at Signal, we've definitely found that, you know, that we were probably a little bit too more focused on that side of things and maybe let other things not be in as much of a focus as they are. So looking at everything as one piece, so CS, marketing and sales it's just really emphasized the importance of that. And I think the prediction for me was going to be that companies will assist on greater communications and alignment across the teams. And with that as well, better data accuracy and cleanliness. So yeah, I think that I predict that will happen. And I have spoken actually this week. We've got some investors at Signal and they invest in some really early stage companies, which is a really great opportunity for me because there's quite a few like COOs, for example, in like seed stage companies who are thinking about their first hires, or they've got a small sales team and they're thinking about making that ops hire. So I often get put on the phone to them to discuss different options and just, you know, I'm not necessarily making recommendations, but I'm just talking to them about experiences that I have. And because we at Signal, we started with RevOps and then we started to sales ops and we've transitioned to RevOps. And I think increasingly, and a revenue ops hire, revenue operations hire is becoming a really early stage hire. And the benefit of having someone who has that insight and can have a look at the systems across the different departments and make decisions and recommendations to the department leads based on a holistic view of the business and the commercial function is just so valuable, that I've definitely seen it may be a self-fulfilling prophecy because these are people that our investors are asking me to speak to. But I've definitely seen people really interested in revenue operations and not necessarily sales operations because they can see the benefit. But like Kevin says, it's a lot easier in smaller companies because to make that, you know, either right from the beginning, you know, obviously it's easy to make that decision, or a small way in because it's a much more agile environment than the bigger company. So I think you are right that the two ends of the spectrum will have different experiences with that move from sales ops to RevOps.
So we'll jump over to Kevin for a one prediction or priority in 2021 for revenue operations, which Kirsty should leave you with enough time to prep another one. Kevin, over to you.
Let's talk about planning, right? I think typically we plan at a year with a year cycle in mind. And we don't know what this coming year is going to be like. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to start planning in quarters and halves, knowing that we can prepare to adjust. So everything that we do is going to need to be built in such a way that we can adjust no matter what happens mid-year. We could completely open wide back up in the summer. Right. And if that's the case, then we're going to need to have compensation plans that don't have to be completely changed from scratch, but can be manipulated based on the way they were built. That's one thing. We need to have territory designs and so forth that makes sense for that. And if we decide that we're going to take our movement to, you know, everybody is an inside seller today, regardless of if you were a field seller or before, you're all inside now. And, you know, we're going to have to make a decision, you know, early on, how are we going to either push for everybody to really move to an inside sales role, and how does that impact the people that we have? Or we're going to have to, you know, find technologies and training and techniques to maintain those higher dollar, higher impact, experienced field salespeople we have, and knowing that they may still be functioning on the inside for the full year, or they may get to turn right back to what they had done before mid-year, right? So, you know, I'm talking, it's just really planning to be agile and not building things that are so tightly coupled that when this environment changes, it just breaks everything and we have to start from scratch.
Yeah, as you were going through that, I'll say in my head, the word agility, that was just, it came to me. And so I'm glad that you touched upon that right at the end. Makes total sense. Kirsty, back over to you.
So prediction, as I said, one that I covered earlier, I think in terms of priority, the main one that I was thinking earlier was around the, very much in line with your agility word, the ability to monitor changes in these key data sets, which is basically what Kevin's just said. But from a more tactical perspective, you know, the ability to monitor changes, keep an eye on what's happening, alert the business and alert the relevant stakeholders to any changes that impact that forecast in any way. But then ultimately, obviously, the ability as a company and as a business and as a revenue function to be able to act swiftly on the alerts in a way that, you know, isn't going to cause any friction. It's going to have the maximum success, which is often the tricky balance between, like, do we change it? What impacts changing things going to have? You know, and then the ability to forecast with better speed and regularity and accuracy. I think the other thing I was going to mention, and is certainly a massive priority for me at the moment and my team, is that the nature of revenue operations is obviously so broad. Like, you know, you're looking after all of, looking and responsible for all the processes, the tools, the learning and development of multiple teams, and basically the entire revenue function for business. So it's huge. And it means that the things that you could do are always massive. And one thing that we really focus on, we don't always get right for sure, is prioritizing in the right way, because otherwise you could have a team of 20 people and you're still all, you know, you if you're trying to do everything, you're trying to boil the ocean, you end up working evenings and weekends, and you have a team that the can't take pride in the work, maybe things aren't getting completed to the satisfaction you would like to take in your work. So what we try and do is really prioritize what are the things that as a revenue team in the business we need to work on and need to give time to and dedicate resource to, and let's make those changes and work together as a team on them instead of trying to do everything. And with that, keeping an eye on people's mental health, like, most of us are working from home 7 days a week, seven, well, sometimes seven, feels like seven, 5 days a week at the moment. And we really, really miss that human interaction. And already, you know, we've been working from home for 9 months or something, as you say. And already I can feel like relationships that I had with people in the office, maybe outside of my immediate team, like, you know, they're just not as good as they used to be in terms of being able to just quickly like be like, oh, could you do me a favor? Or what do you think about this? And not having that constant communication is really having a detrimental effect. So one thing that I'm always really keen on is keeping an eye on the team. And now that we've just had a lockdown we're in darkness. If you don't get out on a lunchtime, you get up in the dark and you go to bed in the dark, and it can be easy to not even leave the flat during lockdown, you know. So keeping a priority for me is prioritizing and keeping an eye on the team's kind of well-being as well. You know, little changes like sitting next to a window so you get more daylight. We're not nocturnal animals. We should be getting daylight. We're not meant to live in the dark. Encouraging them and, you know, giving permission to them to block out time. You know, you can be really, really busy, but do block out time for your lunch break to get outside, go to the shop or something, get a little breather. We've just started doing something which I love as a company. Our CCO started it and we've kind of adopted it. You can end up being in back-to-back meetings from 9 till 6 and or later if you with our US office. So we've started scheduling our meetings at 10 past the hour or 5 past the hour, because we try to adopt the Google speedy meetings thing where the meetings are supposed to finish early, but it just never happened because we knew that, you know, everyone was free to the hour. So what we do now is we start them slightly later, and that just breaks up the day a little bit and means that people can get away from their laptops. You know, it could be replying to emails, replying to Slacks, getting a cup of tea, having a comfort break. And it just helps people to not be so overwhelmed all the time. So that's a priority for my team as well at the moment.
Makes total sense. I like to close out actually with something that Kevin referred to briefly in one of his answers. You mentioned that this may be an opportunity for us to create more robust forecasts. And then also going back to what you were saying right at the end there, Kirsty, is that we should be looking after mental health, and therefore this is also an opportunity for us to think more about that. So when we do move into 2021, we're more prepared with the forecast, but we're also more prepared with our teams to be more productive and to lead happier and healthier work lives. So Kevin, thank you so much for joining. Kirsty, thank you so much for joining. Is there anything you would like to leave the audience with specifically around focuses for 2021 before we close out?
Oh, I can't think of anything. Kevin, have you got a nice, valuable piece to leave it on?
I'll say this. You know, this forces us to go back to the basic principles of sales ops and rev ops. What are they? Why are we here? Because like Kirsty said, we can become kind of the junk drawer of the business because we take on so many things and we sit at the crossroads of the business all the time. And so one of the things that I really try to help people do is focus on, well, why do we exist, and what are the things that we're there to impact year over year, regardless of if it's a difficult time. And there's three things that I like to talk about. I say, look, we need to be actively managed. We need to make sure that we're managed on purpose, we're disciplined, and we're always getting better at our processes, right? But if we're only that, we become sales prevention, and we don't want to be that, right? So we have to also make sure that we've got a foot in the easy to sell for category. We need to be helping our company be easy to sell for. And in times like this, where everything's thrown up like a deck of cards, we have to focus even more on what are we doing to be easy to sell for. And some of that comes down to those things like Kirsty was talking about around just mental health and culture. How do we grow a culture and maintain it during this time? And what tools and processes and communications techniques are we going to do with people? You know, how do we do that? We need to be focused on easy to sell for as well. And then finally, the third piece is high performance culture. You know, how can we continue to reinforce that we as a company need to have a high performance culture that values learning, that values growing and getting better and challenging oneself and encouraging and mentoring other people. And then we happen to build high performance sellers on top of that culture, right? So, you know, look at my challenge to everybody on the call would be to look at the initiatives that you have going on today and put a little dot next to these three things. Which of your initiatives are focused on being actively managed? Which ones are on easy to sell for, and which ones are on culture? And if you find that you're out of balance, go back and reconsider how you can get back in balance, because you need to have all three of those things in balance, especially as we go into 2021. It's a good time to look at them.
Beautifully finished, Kevin. Thank you so much. Guys, I want to thank you for your support of the podcast, both with your time in the original episode and this episode, and also as now new partners to the show. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com.
That's tomhunt@ebster.com.